This is MSONewsSports.com. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by Steve Krause, formerly of the Daily Item of Lynn. Steve, welcome. Good to be talking with you.
How you doing, Bill?
Good. Steve retired recently from the Item. Steve, after how many years with the Item staff?
42 at the Item, 49 overall.
42 at the Item, 49 overall. I know our careers kind of, I'll put careers in parentheses around myself, but kind of parallel a little bit as far as the starting point, as far as me being on the North Shore. So I came right about the same time, maybe a little bit before you to the Item, but you, of course, born and raised here on the North Shore. So, but I want to talk, tell me about the early years and how you got into newspaper reporting, in particular right away into the sports department, because you had other jobs or another job before coming to the Item.
Yeah, it's I started out as a Northeastern University co-op at United Press International. And I went through my entire 5 years at Northeastern working for UPI, and I was very fortunate. I always considered myself as having a very good start. I learned an awful lot about the business before I ever graduated from college. I majored in college, but in majoring in it was kind of strange. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I liked to write, but I didn't. I also liked to play music, so I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And then Watergate happened, the spring semester of my freshman year in college. And, you know, I just devoured those stories. I was always interested in politics anyway, so I devoured those stories. And made me realize, you know, what you can do if you have a job like that. So then and there I declared my major is journalism, and the rest, they say, is history.
Yeah, you know, back then, Steve, I think working for a UPI and Associated Press, there was some rigorous standards and training that you underwent or witnessed or experienced in the newsroom, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking the early 70s when you had what I would consider the last vestiges of real old-fashioned, I guess the term I always heard for it was shoe leather journalism. You know, there wasn't any other way to get a story back in those days except to go out the door and get one. You know, there was no automation, no computers, no Google, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. If you wanted to go out and get a story, you had to go out and get a story. You also had to, you know, you had to research any way that you could. And you also had to have a feel for how to deal with people and how to use all your resourcefulness. I remember one time I was just one of my first or my second years working for them full time. I had to go out and cover a murder in downtown Boston. It was a pretty famous, very grisly murder. And in those days, you know, the first thing you had to do when you went on the scene to cover a murder or cover anything like that was to find a phone. So, because you didn't have cell phones, so you had to find a pay phone, and you resorted to all kinds of trickery to find a phone. And one of my things that I learned from somebody is you paid the proprietor of a restaurant, say, maybe $10 to hang a out-of-order sign on one of the phones so that when you went back to use it, you had one to use. You know, all kinds of weird things like that. Probably wouldn't go over well today, but that's what you did back in those days.
You know, that's a great story because, you know, I remember working at the radio station and at radio stations back at that time period, so late 70s, 80s, and you'd have that teletype machine banging away like the typewriter, and a piece of paper would be spewing out of it, and you'd rip it off, and you'd run into the news booth or whatever it was you were operating on, and you'd be reading an actual sheet of paper. Well, now everything's on screens, obviously. And that that has all changed. And you guys on the newspaper field, you know, had to, you know, it's like the old movie, the old Cary Grant movies, whatever, with the newsroom.
Yeah.
Oh, sweetheart, give me rewrite. You know, there was an awful lot of that. I couldn't describe to you what some of it was like because it was a different time, different era, different type of person. Different situations, a lot more stress, I think, than there is now. Newspaper people back in those days were not gentle souls. You know, there was a little bit of an edge to most journalists, and particularly most editors. And you were very, very afraid of your editors back in those days. Particularly if you were 19 years old and you were in a newsroom with a bunch of people who have been doing this since the 40s, basically, you know? So it's a different... All I can tell you is it was a different time, but that's what I grew up with. That's the business I grew up in, and I think in a lot of ways, I never lost that aspect of it. I always looked at it in those terms, you know, with, as UPI's and AP's motto at the time was, it was a deadline every minute. You know, you didn't have time to waste. If there was a story, you went out and got the story. And you didn't look at it as, oh, I got until 5 o'clock this afternoon to write this because that's what my deadline is. No, your deadline was as soon as you finished writing it. So there was an urgency to this that I loved. One of my favorite stories to tell, I recounted it in the column I wrote on my last day, was when Stan Behrens, who was a gangly, old, whiskey-stained editor, we found out that Jackie Robinson had died. So I was 19 and sitting around, and he barked at me, and bark would have been the right word, to go into the library and find all the clips on Jackie Robinson. Well, I didn't even know there was a room, and I didn't even know what that room was for until then. And so I went in there, and I got the clips, came out, he took a look at two or three of them, found the one he wanted, and then he called our headquarters in New York, and he dictated flawlessly about a 1,500-word obituary on Jackie Robinson. And the reason why he had to do it was because Robinson had died in Stamford, Connecticut, and Boston was the UPI New England headquarters. So I said to myself, God, that would be so wonderful to be able to do. And, you know, that's kind of what started the romance for me.
We're talking with Steve Krause. Steve, I want to get into sports here, and we can come back to news and some of the other pieces a bit later and maybe a different segment. But tell us about the local sports newspaper coverage, you know, as it was when you walked into the Item Sports Department. Because let me just frame this a bit. Because when I came to WESX years ago, so you would have the Daily Item of Lynn, you'd have the Salem News, the Beverly Times, the Peabody Times, the Gloucester Times, the Newburyport paper, and so you'd have all these papers, daily papers, up and down the North Shore, and the Item was one of them. So tell us about, you know, entering the sports department at the Daily Item at that time.
I started writing sports for the Item almost as soon as I got there. That wasn't my job. I was on the desk, but because I had covered them for UPI, Red Hoffman, now there's a name from the distant past, huh? Red Hoffman was the sports editor at the time. He asked me to cover football games. So I did. And that was my first real introduction to the local sports scene, other than having grown up in Lynn and going to all the classical games when I was smaller. And I was a really big Dick Geron fan because I had relatives in Swampscott. I went, and one of the first... I love this. One of the first guys I met and really sat down next to and talked to on the local sports beat was a fellow by the name of Doc Enos in Gloucester. Mm-hmm. Sure, that's a name you know well.
Well,
and,
You know, I go, I remember, not to interrupt you, Steve, but of course I remember Red Hoffman and interviewing, having him on my shows, and of course Doc Enos, being in the press box with Doc from Gloucester. Yeah, so go ahead. Yeah,
of course, absolutely hilarious. There was a game I had to go up to Gloucester to cover. Lynn English play Gloucester, and I get up there, and it's, like you said, because there were so many people back then, you had to get there pretty early to get a seat. Otherwise, you'd be standing for the whole game. And so I get up there. It was about maybe 45 minutes before the game started. And the only seat left in the press box is right next to Doc Enos. So now I sit next to Doc Enos, and Doc has got this portable typewriter, and he's typing every play on his typewriter.
It was light blue, wasn't it?
Right. Yep. And I thought, there were a couple of times during that game, I thought he was going to take the typewriter and throw it out the window. You know, he got very into his fisherman. And I think this was one of Terry Silver's first years up there. And I don't know, I always got along very, very well with Terry Silver. And but it was, I just loved the whole atmosphere of it. You know, I you didn't get that anywhere else. I don't think anyway. And I, for somebody who came in to the item having covered pro sports, and I had covered the 1975 World Series, you know, I'd watched the Montreal Canadiens drink champagne from the Stanley Cup, and here I am, I'm coming in covering English football, or classical football, and I actually liked it more. And I grew to like it more and more as I got older. I just found that there was a purity to that, that there was, you just couldn't touch. And through all the years, through the entire 42 years of doing this at the Item, I always marveled at the fact that you never lost that purity. You know, it was always, you know, it was kids playing because they wanted to play. You know, it wasn't because they felt like they had to or they were getting all kinds of money. You know, they just played to play. And there was just something about that that it was impossible not to like, and it was impossible not to admire. And it was impossible not to celebrate. It was just, I don't know. I guess the only way I can describe it is it was a pretty nice piece of Americana that you got to witness every Friday night or Saturday afternoon. And that there were other sports. You know, I love basketball. And, you know,
Steve, let me just stop you there for a second, because you're right in the sense that whenever you go to these events, there is a good news story to tell. You know what I'm saying? Maybe the team that you're covering doesn't win, but the next week they may win in the case of football. And I want to revert back to you mentioned editors with grit. When you mentioned Red Hoffman, Doc Enos, let me just add another name back then, Bill Kaporis from the Salem News. Sports editors, man, when you mention those three names, for any of us that know those people, that defined the era so vividly.
Well, Billy Kaporis, I met him when he was still with the Herald. And when he came over to the news, was just about the time that my run at UPI was ending, and I had gotten a job at the Eider. And he wasn't, he was always a very interesting guy. He was an interesting guy, and he was just a Herald hockey writer. He had a way about him, you know. He was, you didn't mess with Billy in the sense that if you were writing for him or if you were talking to him, if you were even sitting at a coffee shop and having a conversation with him, you had to, it's very difficult to describe. He had a way about him that you needed to be on your game, on your toes. You know, he would try to scoop you if he was having coffee with you.
No, but you're right. But when, as you, I didn't really articulate this that as well a minute ago, but when you talk about those three guys, when you, if you were to know those guys, sit next to them, talk with them for more than 10 minutes, you would know these guys are going to get the story. You know what I mean? They're.
Really, Kipper was relentless.
Yeah.
He was relentless. I would say out of the three that you mentioned, he probably wins the pennant by 20 games over anybody else when it came to being relentless. He would run you over to get the story.
No, I know. So when you look at the sports departments, can you contrast, the local news scene? How is that local sports coverage scene different today than it was back, let's say, 1980?
Well, the business has changed, Bill. You're trying to do more with less, which is one of the sadder aspects. I don't think we're unique. I think a lot of businesses have found themselves in that situation. You know, the newspaper business changed an awful lot. Computers and the internet really decimated this business, because now, all you need to do is get on the computer and get yourself a little bit of a website and start cranking out stuff out of your mother's basement. You couldn't do that before. There's all kinds of ways now that you can get this information other than by buying a newspaper. I remember when I started at the Adam, there were four people in the sports department full-time, plus, part-time correspondents and things like that. Now we got one sports editor, and he's pretty much the whole show. Now, you cannot be everywhere if you're just one guy. So in that sense, it's a lot different. I think that the... Obviously, it would be impossible for the coverage not to suffer. It can't be what it once was. And I think that there are, unfortunately, I think there are people because of, I think the whole construct in general is not what it used to be. And that includes the sports themselves, the kids who play them. I think that over the almost 50 years that I've been involved with it, there has been way more, way too much, for my money, specialization. You have AAU this, you have traveling team that, and now you kids that used to happily play three sports a year and they were only doing it because they wanted to do it. Now you have AAU baseball, basketball, and you're taking kids that were playing three sports, now they're only playing one. And, I don't know whether... I think that there's a good many people out there who just think that playing sports is their ticket to getting into a good college and a scholarship, and I think that parents kind of allow that to creep into their heads. It's a different situation now, and I'm not sure, it's like everything else that's going on today, Bill, I'm not sure it's ever going to go back to the way it was.
No.
I just think that it's too far along, and it's permeates into everything. And so when you see it, and when you see kids that have the attitude that you remember, you just like it more. There was this kid in Linfield a few years back who played soccer and he played baseball. His name is Jonathan Lutus. I don't know if the name rings a bell. This is the kid you want. It's just the kid you want. It's a kind of a throwback. He's the star of his baseball team, yet when somebody hits a foul ball, he goes off to chase it. I just don't see that there are as many of them now as there used to be.
Steve, let me ask you in this segment, I got one more question for you, but I want to go back to the actual behind-the-scenes kind of thing. So if in, say in broadcasting, in radio, we used to deal with tape. And so if I wanted to do something, it would take me a long time to record it. If you wanted to re-record it or do something with it, then you actually in real time had to play it again, if you will. So a 20-minute interview would take you 20 minutes to copy it, basically, or more. Now in writing, in word processing today, guys can write from their laptops anywhere, put it into your system, get it up on the paper, get it up on your website, itemlive.com. But back in the old days, let's say you went to a Friday night football game. Physically now, you had to walk back. You might have had a car, Steve, but drive back to the office. And then tell me what the process was to get the story, you know, onto the sports page.
Well, in the first place, walking back to your car was a major project. You know, you were up to those games, and I again, Gloucester, a perfect example. You know, when I started doing this, you had to find any place you could to park, because those games were sold out, the crowds were overflowing, and you were lucky if you got a parking space in Rockport. You know, so now you got to walk back to your car. Game ends at 9:30, let's say. You got to walk back to your car, drive back to Lynn, because there was no doing your story from home. So you had to drive back to Lynn, and then you had to just sit down and write. You couldn't waste any time. There's two sides to that, though. First side was that back in those days, the production schedule for the paper was such that it wasn't like you had to break the speed limit to get back to do it, because the production schedule, you didn't have to really have your pages done until 6 o'clock the following morning, you know? It was time. You could go back there and you could kind of spread all your papers out and everything, and you could write. As we got into my career and deadlines got moved up, it got harder and harder to do. But as it got harder and harder to do, the technology made it easier and easier. So there was never really a point where the worst of everything was spread before you. In the beginning, when you didn't have the technology, you had the time. As the time constraints became more and more evident, the technology became better and better, so that now you could go home and write that story. And first of all, they had these TRS 80s that Radio Shack put out, Trash 80s, and you could hook up, you know, a kind of a rudimentary modem that was right into the machine that you could call it in. And then from there, we got computers that had email. You could email them in, and from there, you know, you had FTP servers and Google Docs and everything like that. And as the time constraints got more severe, the technology got better. I feel like I should say, and then we had talkies, you know. that's kind of the evolution of it all. I never really felt that it was the toughest thing in the world to do. Once I got out of there and got back to the office, you know, it was such second nature to me that, first of all, if you're going home from a game in Gloucester, which takes about an hour, by the time you're home, if you haven't written your story by then in your head, you know, then there's something wrong with you. You have to steal every minute you can steal, and that's one way to do it. So, I hate to say this, Bill, but in an awful lot of my career, especially when it came to writing high school sports, I never really considered it working for a living, you know? I don't mean to minimize it, but, you know, if you like doing it and if it's fun and it's part of you, it's not really work.
But you didn't refuse the paychecks, though, right? I mean,
no, I won't say I'm that benevolent, no.
Steve, we'll stop here. We're talking with Steve Krause, recently retired from the Daily Item of Lynn. This is part one. We'll continue just ahead here with these features on msonewsports.com.